John chapter 13. Let's go. We're at the second part of the foot washing passage. So last week we talked about the foot washing. This week, verse 18. I am not referring to all of you, because he just told them that somebody's going to betray him. I know those I have chosen, but this is to fulfill this passage of scripture. He who shared my bread has turned against me. I am telling you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe that I am who I am. Very truly I say, tell you, whoever accepts anyone I send accepts me, and whoever accepts me accepts the one who sent me. And after he said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit and testified, very truly I tell you, one of you is going to betray me. Sorry. It's okay, really. I just am so distractible. His disciples stared at one another at a loss to know which of them he meant. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. Simon Peter motioned to this disciple and said, ask him which one he means. And leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, it is the one to whom I will give this piece of bread when I have dipped it in the dish. One person called this the anti-Eucharist. Like in one story, like in the Eucharist, we receive Christ. And in this one, he receives the devil. The anti-Eucharist. What you're about to do, do quickly. But no one at the meal understood why Jesus said this to him. Since Judas had charge of the money, some thought Jesus was telling him to buy what was needed for the festival or to give something to the poor. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out and it was night. When he was gone, Jesus said, now the Son of Man is glorified and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will give him glory at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give to you. Study your Bible. A new command I give to you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. Simon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later. And Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. And Jesus answered, will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. So, your thoughts, impressions, questions, things that, a lot of narrative here, a lot of things happening in the passage, and then in the midst of all the things, really some great nuggets and some great, great one-liners, intriguing thoughts. Yeah. Yeah, John is really poetic. The Gospel of Mark, for example, is super terse, even in the Greek, like bam, 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 bam. And John just kind of, if you love literature, like he just, the poetry of it's beautiful. And light came into the world. From the very beginning of John 1, we've been playing with this metaphor of light and dark. And so Judas leaves and it's dark. And John for sure isn't just talking about the sun being down, right? Like it's spiritual darkness that he's walking into. Yeah, it's so, again, so rich. Yeah, from our perspective, it seems super obvious. Like the one I give the bread to. But who is it really? Right? Like, what? But in the flow, and John tries to let him off the hook and say like, he said that, but then it seemed very natural that Judas would be, like, that'd be a normal thing. And so it was still unclear. And I think maybe just there's those things in life sometimes where it's not clear until later. And we're like, oh, that's why that thing happened. That's why that person said that thing, because whatever. Yeah. Yeah, Jesus doesn't give a lot of, like, direct commands. This one's a direct command. Super important. And we'll get to it in a minute, but go ahead. Yeah, what Laura said when she was setting up the music is really good here. Like, good point, Laura. This idea that he's telling them I'm leaving, which, I mean, think about you're the disciples and you've spent 3 years of your life following this rabbi around. The level of despair you had to have felt right there. That I'm leaving you. I'm going. And where I'm going, you've been following me all along and you can't follow me on this journey. But then right on the heels of that is this reassurance. Like, but you'll get there. He's stressing the break, but then giving them this reassurance, you know. And then just to hang on to that, when we get to John 17, then we'll promise the Holy Spirit's going to walk with you in this space in between. Yeah, it's good. So, five things I want to talk about today. Betrayal, Vince Anderson and his love choir. Anybody know Vince Anderson and his love choir? Oh, you are in for a treat. Posture, as I have loved you, and then faith and failing.
Let's start by talking about betrayal.
Look at verse 18. I'm not referring to all of you. I know those who I have chosen. I think specifically here we need to think of this chosen word. Sometimes people take that and then apply it to all of Christianity ever and who God chooses and all that. I think specifically he's talking about the disciples. And what he's saying about the disciples is, listen, I know you. I know your character. I know who you are. And then he quotes this verse, he who shared my bread has turned against me. We should hear this as super, super personal. I think sometimes when we read the story or when we get to stories like this in the Bible, it's easy to go into kind of like historical narrative, like this is just the facts of what happened. And yet I think what John is doing here by quoting the Psalm passage is trying to get at the heart of what it feels like to be betrayed. That this very person who sat at my table and we shared food together is the one who turned on me. It wasn't a religious leader. It wasn't my opponent. It wasn't this person that I identified as my enemy, but rather the person that was close to me, who walked with me, who shared my bread. We eat with people all the time, but I want you to think about this context of like, this isn't like business lunch, I shared a meal with you. Rather, think of it in terms of, this is the person that I invited into my home, and we lit candles, and we sat around the table, and we bore our souls to each other. This person is the one who betrays me. And I'm going to talk about feelings in just a minute, but look at verse 21 just briefly. This idea then is that it's troubling Jesus. This betrayal from Judas isn't just Jesus. Like, pay attention to this. This isn't just Jesus saying, like, here's the divine plan, let's do it. But rather, this sense of betrayal is a very, very personal betrayal to Jesus. It started me thinking about, like, just the nature of being betrayed. We've all been betrayed somewhere, right? There's been somebody, some of you, it's been a marriage partner. Some of you, it's been a family member, or somebody, it's been a very close friend, or a boss, or a coworker, or somebody that we loved. And we poured our life and our time and our energy, and we did everything for this relationship, for this person, and now they've taken that which we've shared with them and turned it against us. I want you to sit with that for a minute. How does that feel? There's a name. I think we all have a name. There's a person that hurt me and felt like betrayed me. I shared something and it got turned against me, and it was 15 years ago. And when that person's name gets brought up still, there's something right there. It sits in my gut. Anybody else? You have a name right now. If I just said, there's a name. Only like six of us? Really? I think the challenge in this passage and the beauty of this passage is if we go backwards and ask ourselves, even still, how did Jesus treat Judas? What did he do? What did he do last week? He washed his feet. See, when I feel betrayed, I'll just tell you, when I feel betrayed, I run. I hide. I get busy. I find reasons not to be in the relationship anymore. I find if that person were to visit our church today and I saw that person over there, everything in me would try to be over here, right? I would try to, because it's uncomfortable and it hurts. And it, 15 years later, it shouldn't hurt. And I need to do the work, right? And Jesus' example for us. And remember all of this passage, if we go back up to the section we ended on last week, is he tells us in verse 16 that he's set an example that we're to follow. And he's going to say that again here in a little bit. But he set the example that we're to follow. And his example is the person that betrayed him is the person that he said, hey, before he walks out, I better wash feet. I better serve him before he leaves us. This is my last chance to let Judas know how much I love him. And so I want to acknowledge betrayal sometimes takes a long time to get over, right? Sometimes we spend a lifetime trying to work out the betrayals that we felt. And grief is real. And there's times and spaces where we need to sit and we need to grieve and we need to feel it. I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. But the trajectory of the Christian life ought to be moving towards forgiveness. We ought to be moving in places where we're moving to what Jesus did, where he washed Judas' feet. That even when we feel deep senses of betrayal, if that person were in our church today, I ought to be working towards reconciliation. I probably ought to be working to reconciliation even if the person isn't in our church. And I'm getting better. Vince Anderson and his Love Choir. Can I play a video for you? Yeah. Was that a little heavy? So let me introduce you to Vince Anderson. Don't play it yet, just a second. Vince Anderson is, it's actually the Reverend Vince Anderson and his Love Choir. Last year in February, I was in New York City and I got invited to go hear the Reverend Vince Anderson and his Love Choir. And when I was invited to do so, I thought, that just sounds weird. And I didn't go. And we had just gotten back from another trip and I only had a day at home and I didn't want to leave my family a day early, so I didn't go. Knowing what I know now, dang it, I missed something special. So the Reverend Vince Anderson was going to seminary, dropped out of seminary, and decided to become a full-time musician. Today, he sees his ministry as to the bars of New York City. And so whatever bar he's in, that's his church. He plays at like 1 a.m. and people get up and dance and holler, and he writes amazing music. So I want to introduce you to Vince Anderson and his Love Choir by showing you a video. It's like 3 or 4 minutes. Just enjoy it. It's fun. And then I want to tell you a story about Vince Anderson and his Love Choir and back to the text. Is that enough? All right, go. was leading worship that. So that will make a Baptist kid start to want to dance, right? Man, he is something, isn't he? Today he's like, he's older. This is from 2011, I think. And his beard is really gray, and it's like this long. And he's adorable. And I taught a session the other day on the Enneagram, and he sat in my session, and then we talked for a while. And then Friday morning, I didn't realize who he was, and I didn't realize what he's capable of. And so I'm not really a morning person. I'm a slow starter. I wake up early most days by, it's complete discipline. I choose to get up early, and then I kind of get through the first part of the day. And so Friday morning, I was, you don't even need the music. You can just watch him, and it makes me smile. So Friday morning, I got up, and I was, I mean, when you're at a conference like that, and there's people that you like, and you don't get to see very often, you know, I came back to my room that night at like 1 a.m., and then I was up because I was trying to meet somebody, and I walked into the building at Christian Theological Seminary, and I heard this really loud voice singing, and what I found out later is it was Vince Anderson. So I started walking down the hallway, and I was like, what is going on? And I got to the room, and the sign on the door said Native American Flute Circle, which I wouldn't have gone to. And I was thinking, like, this isn't flutes. And so I stood in the doorway, and then, like you know, have you ever done this thing where you just feel, like, compelled? Like, I can't not, like, I found myself, like, creeping into the room. And then my friend Josh was sitting at a table, and he like pulls out a chair, and I'm like, no, I'm just gonna be a second. And I sat down, and he's working on a project where he's taken all the Psalms and put the Psalms to music. And he said in the thing, he's like, I believe that whenever we read the Psalms, we're betraying the Psalms. We should never read a Psalm. A Psalm is not theology, it's poetry. We should sing them. And so he's, and it's hilarious what he's done with the Psalms. Like, he did one Psalm that's like super overly happy and did it like in a Tin Pan Alley kind of, I've got a little video if you really want to see it afterwards, I can show you. But, and then he took a lament Psalm, because sometimes the laments start with like, God, why have you left me? And then they often go to this really unnatural, like, but I trust in the Lord. And so he starts off by playing like Beethoven, like, God, I'm so mad, like this. And then he told us that he got another musician with him, as she played ukulele, and he had her do the other part. So it was like, God, I'm so mad. And then she would play and be like, but I trust in you. And so they'd go back and forth like this, really like, what? And he's like, but that's the feeling of the Psalm. And so he's super creative and super amazing. And I'm telling you this really long story. So to tell you this, so then later in the day, and so he has us laughing, and we end it with this little light of mine, and everybody's up clapping and dancing in the morning, and like, what has happened to me? Like, this moment just like exploded out of me. And my friend Josh, later in the day, we were trying to describe this whole thing that happened in the morning, and people weren't up, and so many people missed this incredible moment. And my friend Josh said this great line. He said, and I don't know what his Enneagram type is, I'm curious now. He's like, usually I'm pretty emotionally dead inside, which I thought, what a really funny self-aware statement. It's like, usually I'm pretty emotionally dead inside, and I cried through the whole thing, which he did. I was sitting next to him. He was just weeping throughout the thing and laughing and weeping and laughing as we're going all this thing. And I think the point of all of this is, my description of it later is like, something happened Friday morning for me where I got sucked into something, and just joy just oozed out of like every pore of my body. And by the way, that song, Get Out of My Way, we all sang together later in the day. And I don't know if you caught the words, but the choruses are about, like, he's telling the song about Joseph, and he's telling the song about Moses encountering Pharaoh. And then it's a call and response. Like, the crowd sings, Get Out of My Way, and about any obstacle that stands in your way. Like, super cool. And I was tying that back to this thing where in the text, verse 21, if we're coming back to text, I promise. After he said this, Jesus was troubled in spirit, and says, very truly, I tell you, one of you is going to betray me. I think there's something where when people talk about the Gospel of John, one of the things I did when I set up the book, Gospel of John, is I told you that John has a super high Christology. And what we mean by that is, because John was written later than Matthew, Mark, and Luke, because John comes much later, John has developed his theology of Jesus as the Son of God. And the other ones weren't there yet in their understandings. They were more like, Jesus did amazing things. John gets to, yeah, because he descended from God. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was like that whole thing in the beginning, like high Christology. And I think one of the things people don't emphasize enough is that while John is doing high Christology, he's also doing high humanity of Jesus as well. It's John that says to us in chapter 11 when he encounters Nicodemus has been dead, and it says what? Jesus wept. It's here that he says in verse 21, after he had said this, Jesus was troubled in his spirit, that he's broken inside. And what I love that happens in that moment, have you ever been like really troubled in spirit, whatever that is for you? Like something's like just in you and you're just like, oh, this is heavy. And you go to meet with somebody, and I don't know who that is, whatever it is, and you say to yourself, I am not going to talk about that thing. Either that person's not safe, or I just don't want to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about that thing at work. I'm not going to talk about that thing at church. I'm just not talking about it. But it's so much in you that when you get in that conversation, you just kind of go like, there it all is. Anybody else, or is it just me? All right, so some of us. Good chunk of us, right? To me, that's Jesus right there. He's so troubled in spirit that finally he just like, well, here it is, somebody's going to betray me. Like, there's so much happening there. And I think sometimes, and this is probably wise words for all of us on the Enneagram, right? So those of you who take my Enneagram class, we're starting to work around. And today we're going to talk about fours. Fours are the one type on the Enneagram that it's okay, they're okay with emotion. And the rest of us are in some kind of a battle with our feelings, whether we're trying to deny them or get busy so we don't have to think about them, or if you're a three like me, or just out of touch with our emotions. So this is like very in touch with emotions. Jesus being present with who he is all the way through. And like I said, for some of us, maybe the fours, it comes naturally, and for every one of the rest of us types, that doesn't come super easy for all of us. Last weekend, we were down at the Formation community, and I was telling my friend Vicky that my parents moved out of their house that we built when I was in college together. It was like family project. I was in college. My brother was in high school. We built their house. And last weekend, my parents moved out of the house over the last two weekends. And it's been a little bit hard. And part of it has to do with my parents are getting older. And part of it is that house has been the hub of our family for a long time. Dang it, I'm going to cry. And I was on vacation, and I was scanning my Facebook. And on my Facebook, my dad said something like, 75% of the house is packed up. So many people are helping us. It's great. And I looked at Jennifer and just like, tears. And I was like, but I'm on vacation. Can't cry. Can't do it. I'm not going to. And every time for the last couple weeks, I get to that spot, like I'm not thinking about it. I'm not going to. And I was sitting with my good friend, Vicky, and she said, so when are you going to make time to cry for it? I'm not, is the answer. I'm going to keep busy so I don't have to talk about it. I don't have to think about it. And I don't have to cry. And that's so the wrong response, right? That I think when Jesus talks about, this is my example, following it is part of being deeply connected to his humanity and being troubled in spirit and allowing ourselves to feel what we feel. And for some of us, that takes an awful lot of choice. For me, it takes a choice to slow down and to let myself feel and not just to move on to the next thing and run away and dodge the question or whatever it is. And it takes a lot of effort for me to sit with it and say, I need to cry this one out a little bit. Wait, time out. I have to do something. Mom, don't freak out. All right, she listens to the podcast. But I think this is part of two of what it means to follow after Jesus. If you're in our formation communities, which we'll start promoting a lot in the next month, one of the things we say on retreat number 5, I think, is that part of the pathway to knowing God is knowing the self. And in knowing myself, I come to know God better. And it's this spiral thing that's always going on of knowing myself so that I can know God. And part of that knowing of the self is part of a getting in touch with our feelings about things and about the world and about people. And getting to spaces where we get truer and truer and name what is true of us and in us and what we feel. in safe places. I don't think we have to blurt out to everybody, by the way. That's not what I was trying to say about that. Jesus in this moment is with his dearest friends. But in places where it's safe for us to be true to our feelings. As I have loved you. Verse 33. My children, I will be with you only a little longer, and you will look for me, just as I told the Jews, so I tell you where I'm going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. And by this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. I don't want to spend a lot of time here because I talked about it last week, right? But this idea that we don't get to define what's loving, we don't get to define what love is. Sometimes, you know, I think, and I said this last week, like I think early on in marriage, I wanted to say to Jennifer, well, I'm being loving to you because I'm telling you, right? Because that to me is what makes me feel loved. And so I was telling her what was loving. She's like, I don't experience it like that. This is what will actually make me feel loved. And Jesus isn't giving it to us to tell, like, this is what's loving. I've decided what's loving and I'll tell you what's loving. But rather Jesus is saying, no, I'm telling you what's loving. This is the example I've set. And he washes feet and he heals people and he embraces everybody that comes to him and makes space for everyone. He includes everyone. He's actually set the example. So any conversation about what is loving as a Christian that doesn't include because this is how Jesus loved isn't really the pathway of Jesus, right? So if we're going to talk about what's loving, then part of the conversation always for us that call ourselves followers of Jesus is a discussion of the example of Jesus leads me to believe this way. Any conversation in politics that talks about people or things and isn't talking about this is my view that I hold because this is the example Jesus set for me isn't a Christian conversation. The Christian way is love is defined by Jesus. And Jesus defined it by washing feet. Jesus did it by living with his disciples and being among them and all the things I've already said. One other thing. I want to go back. Can I go back in the text just a minute? I skipped over one thing I want to point at. Verse 24, 23. I'm just saying numbers now. 22, his disciples stared at one another as if at a loss of which one of them he meant, and one of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved, was reclining next to him. And Simon Peter motioned to his disciple and said, ask him which one he means. And leaning back against Jesus, he asked him, Lord, who is it? And Jesus answered, it is the one whom I give this bread and all this stuff. We got all that. What I want to point out is this idea that Jesus has the crowds, and we've talked about how he's left the crowds, and now he's with what we call his dearest companions. Remember that last week from the message? He's with his dearest companions, the disciples, and probably some women and others. And then if you read the other gospels, you get a sense that inside of that 12, there's a three. There's Jesus and James and John and Peter. And at the transfiguration, he has those three with him. And then inside that three, there's this one, this disciple that Jesus loved. Most people believe that John is using that as a euphemism for himself and doesn't want to name himself, so he uses the pseudonym of the one Jesus loves. And over the next couple chapters, I think we see it seven times that he refers to himself this way. There's other theories that are interesting too, but we'll go with the traditional one for now. I think it's interesting, the posture, oh, I have it up there, posture of this particular disciple. That his posture is one of what? What's he doing? What's that? He's reclining against Jesus. There's this real intimacy between this disciple and Jesus, that he's so close to Jesus that at this table, he's reclining against Jesus. I was thinking about in my own life, when I have this desire, I don't want to be the crowd, and I don't just want to be in the room, But in my truest, like, best moments, I want to be reclined up against Jesus. I think that's especially what the Christian mystics are leading us into, is this experience of Jesus that is beyond what I think in my head or the creeds that we say, but is rather this experience of Jesus where we actually lean up against Jesus. And we know what it is to love because we're so leaned into Jesus. Probably my highlight of 2016, unless something comes that I don't see, probably my highlight of 2016, I was just talking about it the other night, was this past year in February at the prayer breakfast, I met this pastor, and I've told you about him before. His name's Steve Savalich, and he and I have been corresponding throughout the year together. And he was telling us stories about Jesus in a way that made me feel like this man is leaning up against Jesus, and I want to sit at this guy's feet. And quite literally, we had a session with him where he talked to like 12 of 15 of us, and he talked for an hour and a half, and he got done. I was like, the dude just talked about Jesus for 90 minutes, and I couldn't get enough. And then we went to a party that night, and he was there. And I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you've been at a party, and really, you just, who cares about everybody else at this party? I just want, wherever this guy is, I want to get close to this guy. And I quite literally maneuvered myself to get a seat as close to this guy, because whatever he was talking about, I sound really creepy, don't I? But you've done it. Let's just put it this way. You've been at a party in college where you saw him or her across the room and you just wanted to be where she was. I just wanted to be where this guy was that he was talking about Jesus, because he was leaned up against Jesus. And if he was going to keep talking about Jesus like that, I just wanted to be there. I love the posture of this disciple. And I know that we're all prone to get up and run around and like get distracted. But my desire in myself is I just want to keep coming back to this place of intimacy with Jesus, of being present to my feelings, of being present to what Jesus is inviting me into, of what it means to love. That's where I want to be. I want to be in those kinds of conversations. I mean, that's some of what I loved about last week, is I feel like I had so many great conversations about people that are asking this question, like, how do we lean ourselves up against Jesus? How do we keep following after Jesus, even if it's challenging to us? I think that gets us to a good conclusion then, is because at the very end of the passage, we get this beautiful exchange between Peter and Jesus, where Peter's like, I want to be leaned up too. I'll go wherever you go. And Jesus is like, yeah, not so much. And I think that's faith and failing, right? That faith is always running on both rails, that I'm faithful in 1 minute, and in 1 minute, I'm camped at the feet of Jesus. And then the very next, I'm Peter, and I'm like, Jesus who? I don't know who you're talking about, which we'll get to in a little bit. And I think that's the grace note. Sometimes when we start talking about following after Jesus, we get really self-righteous and we start like wagging our finger at everybody who's not following Jesus in the same way we are, or they're not leaned up against Jesus right now. They're in a season of like, I don't know who Jesus is at all and I'm lost and confused. And part of the grace of this passage is this disciple that Jesus is super close to. He's not the disciple Jesus loved, but he's in the three. He's really close to Jesus, and Jesus is like, you're gonna fail. And Peter does fail, and Peter fails magnificently. And in John 21, we're going to get to the spot where he reconciles with Jesus magnificently as well. And that this is always the twin rails faith always runs on. Faith is always faithful at times, and we run white hot at times, and then other times we're off and we're back into the party and we're way away from Jesus. And we keep moving back and forth, and those are the twin rails. So many good things in this passage, aren't there? Let's pray. Jesus, be with us. Draw us to your side, to those places of intimacy and goodness where we're so close to you that we're leaned up against you. And in those spaces, show us how to love well, how to forgive those who have betrayed us, how to be present to our own feelings, and then how to make a difference in the lives of the people we love and the people that are our neighbors and the people that we think of as other, so that they'll know that we are Christians because we love. Not because we feel like we love or say that we love or sing about love sometimes in church, but rather we do the things that demonstrate love like we talked about last week. And so challenge us, shake us. I want to be shaken. I want to be in conversations where we wrestle with how do we love well. In your name I pray, amen.